You're relocating on another house.
Can you introduce him?
Sure.
I will do that.
He's fine, yeah.
I'm glad so many did come out. I called quite a few today, but some of them were busy and some of them were working, so. Today we're going to, what it was called for here is that we're going to have a hearing. This is the Alaska Native Review Commission, and I'll give you a little, I'll read you a little background so that you'll know exactly what's happening and who is here. It says in July 1983, Frobisher Bay, Canada, the Inuit Circumpolar Conference established the Alaska Native Review Commission and appointed the Honorable Thomas R. Berger, an internationally recognized Canadian jurist, to be commissioner. On December 13, 1983, by unanimous resolution, the World Council of Indigenous Peoples, representing interests of Indians in North and South America and Indigenous peoples of other continents, became co-sponsor of the Alaska Native Review Commission. This action emphasized the international importance of what happened to us in the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act. The Alaska Native Review Commission is independent, a condition agreed to when Judge Berger accepted his appointment. The commission is to examine and report on the socio-economic status of Alaska Natives, the history and the intent of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971, the historic policies and practices of the United States in settling claims by Native Americans, placing the Alaska Native Settlement Claims Settlement Act in political perspective, and the functions of the various Native corporations in fulfilling the spirit of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act for Alaska Natives, and the social, cultural, economic, political, and environmental significance of ANSCA to Indigenous peoples around the world. The Commission began its work in September of 1983, and will possibly, the date for publishing this report is September 1985. So what's going to happen here is that Judge Berger will be taking testimony, or what you have to say, and it will be recorded. And he has gone to, will be going to a lot of villages. He just come from Tetipa. Last night he was in Seward, and possibly the rest of the week they'll be in Kenai and English Bay and Port Graham for the Chugach area anyhow. And so he wants to hear what you have to say about the land claims and what it means to you. He's not going to give you any answers. He's going to just listen. And it's going to be recorded. And he wants to know exactly how and what your feelings are on the land claims. You know, it's 20 years now, pretty soon, and there's going to be lots of things happening. And so those are some of the things that they want to hear about. And so, without any more talking, I'd like to introduce you to the Honorable Mr. Berger.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I've been traveling around the state of Alaska now since February, and this is the 30th place I've been to. I've already been to 29 villages and towns in most regions of Alaska, and we've heard from about 650 people who've spoken about land claims and about the way it's worked out as they see it. And maybe I could just tell you that naturally, wherever I go, people are talking about 1991. They're concerned about what will happen if shares in the corporations become transferable after 1991? What if people can sell their shares? What if outside corporations can take over the native corporations? What will happen to the land? They're concerned about what will happen if the state of Alaska decides to impose a property tax after 1991 on native corporations. How can the corporations raise the money to pay the tax? And of course, wherever I go, people have asked, why aren't the children born since 1971 entitled to be enrolled as shareholders? I'd like to know what you think about all those questions, whether you think people should have the right to sell their shares in 1991, get some money, buy a snow machine, fix up their house, whatever, or whether people should hold on to their shares or be prohibited from selling their shares so that the land stays in native hands. In some villages, in fact, in most of the villages, people have talked about native sovereignty, about the restoration of native government to native people, and that's something that you may wish to talk about, because the proposal has been made by many people that if the lands the corporations hold are transferred to tribal governments, traditional councils, IRA councils, then the land can't be taken over by outsiders and can't be taxed and so on. Well, I expect I'll hear from you on those questions. I'd also like you to tell me how you think the corporations have functioned, the village corporations, the regional corporations, where the corporations have worked out well, and if they haven't worked out so well, if they have failed in some ways, well, I'd like you to tell me about that too. And where do we go from here? I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. I should say that with me is my wife, who's traveling with me through the Chugach region, and you may have met Doric Meshaw, who is seated here, who is working with us and helped to arrange these meetings, and Jim Sykes is taking down the testimony on tape so that it can be transcribed later on. Now, when I'm finished going around the state, and I'll be finished in January or February, I'm going to write a report about ANCSA, about the corporations, about 1991, about sovereignty, and I'm going to make recommendations about what I think ought to be done. And though my report will be based on what you say, that is, what you people have to tell me here tonight, and what Alaska Natives have told me at a lot of other meetings that I've held, it's on the basis of what you say that I'll be writing my report, and that's why it's being taken down on tape so it can be transcribed and written up, and there'll be a permanent record of what Alaska Natives think, what they want to do. And my report will be based on that. My report will be made public in the summer of 1985, and copies will be sent to you. So it'll be available to you, and I hope it will be a constructive report that will help Alaska Natives to decide for themselves what their future ought to be. Well, that's enough from me, and may I just say that we're pleased to be here, and glad that we were asked to come down to the Chugach region, and we can start. And perhaps if you would just come up here and sit here when you have something to say, so that it can be taken down on the microphone and recorded on tape, that would be very helpful. Yes, ma'am.
Before you start in, can I say something?
Sure. We've got a mic here, ma'am. Maybe you could give us your name and...
Don't tell me I'm out of order. Maybe I am, but I want to say... See, this is what you call land claim. It's not a land claim. I tell you, when I was in Sitka, in 1925. I was 15 years old. They were collecting $35. They were going to send to William Paul down to Washington, D.C. So, of course, I was working down in Sitka. And I put my $35 in there, and my grandmother. I had two old grandmothers. And so this is what you call long claim now, is a time, I guess you heard about when the Navy killed some of the kids down the Prince of Wales Island, that their fathers went seal hunting, and the kids stayed home because there's older people there, and they told them to stay home with them. Well, young kids from 8 to 20, they stayed home. They're the ones, the oldest ones, if they can go seal hunting, why can't we? So all the kids went toward that island of the Prince of Wales Island on this side of it. They went there. That's where the kids got. They see them. They were seal hunting too. And the Navy was there. And they killed them kids from 10 to 20. And that's why when the older people came back, they asked them what happened. Where's the kids? The older people and the old women and men told them, and they said they followed you guys, but the navy told them to go home, and they wouldn't go home, so the Navy shot them right there in the island. That's what this is in the 1700s. And when the people came, there's only one tribe, that Kokontan, they call them Kokontan, and Haidas. They're the ones that went there when the kids got killed. So it started from there, 1819, and so the people, the older people, says, well, we'll see about this, we'll see. So they came together, the Kogontans, and they went to people that knows things. So William Paul was available 1925, and they sent him down there. Why did they gonna sue? They gonna sue the government? Well, they said he went up. I don't know how many times he went back. And every so often they take collection, and they have to send him back. So we sued the government for $7 million. Them two clans, Kokontans and Haida. And it came about 1925. Up to 1935. Up and then, in the 40s, them kids went to school. They were talking about why can't the other people get everybody go with that money, only just certain people, because they're the kinds that sued the people, because their kids was there is the one that got killed. That's why we sued them. And Cecil Barnes, John Borbidge, David Abraham were the ones that told them why can't give them. That why I told Cecil when he was here, and he wouldn't stay still about. So I told him, I said, well, if he got kids and boys, if they got killed in the service, you get $10,000. Are you going to share it with me? Well, that's the way it is. It's my relatives that got killed at Prince William Island. That's why we sued. And all of a sudden, John Borbidge and Cecil Barnes said, we'll call it a land claim. I don't know what the heck is a land claim. I said, it's my kids that got killed. I said, the whole world is getting it now. I can tell you a lot of things about these things, but I don't want to make trouble. I tell all my friends in here, every one of them. Outsiderism. I just want to know what am I going to do, since I was the one who was supposed to get that money. I just when I was down in Sitka 5 years ago, there were very few old people there, and I asked them then, and they told me, yeah, there's nothing we can do because we don't understand those things. Well, I said, I don't know anything about it either, but I said, my grandmother told me all about these things. I said, they made me sit down there and listen. That's how I know about these things. But sister can have it like that. I just wonder what I'm going to do. I don't have no money, and that so-called land claim was supposed to be mine after all my relatives died. It hurts after all my relatives died. Now the hole's getting it. Where am I? Nothing. That makes me so mad. Someday, they're going to find out what it is being. What the land claim makes me so mad when there's a land claim. What the heck is land claim? It's my blood that shed for this money when that's why we sued them. Now the whole world's got them. I don't have nothing. Now all of a sudden, oh, you're going to have land. You're going to have land. Where is it? Here in Yakutia, I bought the heck out of them too. Over there, they get $500 every year, kids and all. What they were going to have done here? Nothing. Little scrawny trees and things. We're supposed to sell that. And you that's the way the thing about me. I'm not supposed to get some things, and here everybody's rich except me. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Well, we've heard in many places about what people expected after the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was passed in 1971, and quite a few people feel that they didn't receive what they had been led to expect they would. So you're not alone in that, ma'am. We were in Southeast Alaska and did hear about the lawsuit that was brought many years ago and finally concluded in the 1960s by the Tlingit and Haida Central Council and others referred to the contributions they made, as you did, ma'am, to enable that lawsuit to be brought forward. Well, pardon?
What do you want to hear?
Well, what do you want to say? I want to hear what you want to tell me. Let's put it that way.
Well,
you relax there. And in fact, I think I'll take my jacket off here.
My name is Mike Vigil from Chinega, from the village of Chinega. And I suppose I should just start off saying I was born here in Corova, but raised in Chinega, the village of Chinega. And until I was about 10 years old, then moved down into the States to go to school. But the life that I knew back then compared to the life I learned in the city, there's no comparison at all. It was like turning over a full leaf. And through time and schooling, and I finally, now that we've got the village rebuilt from when it was destroyed in the 64 earthquake, that we finally got settled back there, I can just say that through my travels all through the States, and here in the state of Alaska itself, that's where I feel I belong. That's my niche. That's where I feel most comfortable at. I feel that's me. And so what the Native Claimant Settlement Act means to me then is we'll always have our hunting and fishing grounds. Whereas, you know, if like the Forest Service or State of Alaska owned a land and somebody else bought it privately, or it was privately developed or whatever, that was still our hunting and fishing lands. That's the lands that we lived off of and we still do. So what the Native Claimant Settlement Act means to me is it's more or less a guarantee that we'll always have our hunting and fishing grounds for a way to keep on carrying on our culture and heritage and live in the way that we've lived. And then just myself saying that after living in the city, the way we live, there's no comparison at all. It's the life. So, and then it's not as far as 1991 goes, and them paying taxes or charging taxes, and we have to pay taxes on it. There's got to be some sort of way through politics and bureaucracy, which I'm sure you know a lot more about than me, that we can get around that. We've got to find that way, so that way we can pass that land on to our children and their children, so we could keep up the heritage and culture. But we can't pay taxes on it. That'll just force us to pay the land, to pay the taxes, and then eventually we'll have no land again. And then there goes our culture. But anyway, who's
next? Maybe I could just ask you a couple of questions. When did you go to school in the lower 48?
In 62. I started down there and graduated high school in 71 and moved back up here permanently in 74 after previous schooling.
Where were you living down there?
1 year Denver and the rest of the years in Seattle. And all up and down the coast except California. But those two cities, general. I'm a carpenter by trade, so it keeps me moving.
Yeah. In the village that you come from, was just re-established. How many people are living there now?
Approximately.
Ooh, I don't know, approximately. Well, how about if I just tell you there's 9 families?
Well,
there must be 25, 30. Mm-hmm. 25. But there's 9 houses that are occupied now. We've got 21 houses all together. And I guess this weekend is the big move for a lot of people. But a lot of people are waiting for the end of fishing season also before they move back over. Mm-hmm. So then eventually we'll probably end up having hopefully 60 to 80 people, including children, down there. That's just the right size. Mm-hmm. You know everybody. And it's just, I don't know, it's kind of the way Alaska is. Everyone cares for each other up here and shares what they have. But you get in the city, and it's no one has time for no one. And everyone's watching their rear end, figuring that everyone's trying to get over on them somehow. But you don't have that sort of stuff in a village life. It's like one big family. It's everyone, is what it comes down to, is everyone caring.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much. Yeah.
Henry McCarker is my name, from Eyak Village. I feel very sympathetic with what Margaret Anderson just got done saying about the elderly people. It is one of the biggest things that we have even looked to towards the elderly people trying to realize something out of the Native Claims Settlement Act. But then going back to the Native Claims issue, one of the biggest things that I've often thought as far as the claims issue was that when you look at the implementation flow chart with what had came out was, to me, a big burden to the Native people to try to understand the business approach towards how it was going to flow and be operated. I also believe, too, that, you know, we've seen it, too, that the Native people have had a hard time trying to find honest people for the management positions of running those corporations. We've probably seen a lot of them that have, well, used the term swindled, or one way or the other, unnecessarily the funds where it could have been utilized in a better way towards implementing the Native Claims Settlement Act. My biggest concern is that looking towards the honesty of people for the management positions of running those particular corporations. And then another issue too, as far as the sovereignty issue of the Native people, I've often felt that when the Native people should have the right to the sovereignty issue. When we look at the general public or the world over, or any governments of our whole nation and our world, municipalities or states, they allow boroughs to be formed, they allow city governments to be formed. Why then can't we have the sovereignty issue in the same principle or the same as they have had the right to do? I've really tried to think of the issue that we really should have those privileges. After all, what when you talk about the Indian self-determination, if we're going to be self-determined, hey, well, let us be self-determined. On the 1991 issue, I have mixed thoughts about that too, you know, about, I realize that everyone will have the right to sell their shares of stock, but I myself feel that no, that I don't think that was the purpose of the Native Claims for the elderly people or the people that fought for the Native Claims Settlement Act in day one. I don't think their purpose was to get rid of or sell the land or get rid of everything. I'd like to see it go on. But mainly it's for the elderly people to realize something before it's all. Maybe we will see the day when we do get good management. That's about all I have. Yeah,
thanks, thanks, Mr. Rupp. Yeah, right. We'll try to get his attention.
My name is Larry Evanoff, and I'm from the newly rebuilt village of Chenega Bay. My feelings, well, first of all, I should tell you, I really haven't started in, I guess, quote, the native Indian politics until about 1981. So I really didn't know too much about the Lands Claim Settlement Act other than what I read in the newspapers and what I hear going on the street. I was working in Anchorage all that time, so my contact with the people I now live with was pretty limited because of the distance. Yeah. Yeah, that's right, he did. I should say something about that. But it wasn't until the president fired me in 1981 that I really became involved in native politics. Since then, I've tried, you know, tried to educate myself on what the lands claim is and what it means and what it means to me. I don't see anything that I like, to tell you the truth. I think it's been set up to fail, personally. You know, for the main reason they give you a 20-year, they give you a 20-year stipulation in there, that at the end of 20 years you could virtually lose all your stock, all your voting rights and with your people, and eventually lose all your land. And you, being a native the way I grew up, if you don't have land, you know, you're just merely existing. I can remember, you know, in the olden days that, you know, land, you know, you didn't have deed to land, you know, you didn't own it. You just used it, but anymore these days that, you know, you're gonna have to have a piece of paper saying this is your property, this is your land, you're gonna build a fence around it, you're gonna throw some barbed wire around it to keep everybody off of it. I don't see it. I don't understand that way. And as far as the native corporations, that's another kind of a sore spot with me. You know, you just can't take people that weren't that well educated in business, in profit making business, and says here's $40 million, you know, go out and have fun or do whatever you want with it. Somebody that doesn't, you know, is not used to managing money or not used to making a profit for a living, you know, you just can't give him some money and says, here, go make a profit. It takes a lot of schooling, and it takes a lot of business sense. And some business sense I don't understand either, because, you know, it's all backstabbing, so to speak. That's why I don't particularly like what's been happening about the native corporations, the village corporations especially. And as far as the 1991 issue, I better not say that. We're being recorded here, so I'm going to just say that I don't particularly like 1991 deadline. Maybe I'd better stop there before I say something I'm going to be ashamed of later. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm John Christensen. I was born in Cordova. Was raised for the most part in the lower 48 and returned here several years ago. The Land Claims Settlement Act in, as this is, I guess, a review commission, so reviewing it from this point as I see it, was no settlement at all. I think when it came about, very few of the people understood at all what it meant. There may have been a few that did, and even those that were directly involved, which were, to my knowledge, not very many people in the negotiations, I don't think the Claims Act was even what they expected. To put people barely 100 or 200 years out of the Stone Age into big business, it doesn't seem like any kind of settlement to me. As far as looking forward from this point towards, I suppose, 1991 and beyond, I don't see where the corporations, either the village or the regional corporations, have a chance of a snowball in hell of surviving without the sovereignty issue being settled favorably. And be allowed to operate in whatever manner they would choose to do so, be it in coincidence with state corporate laws, federal business regulations, and whatever else. I really can't see them surviving in the structure that they must operate in. And if the land remains tied to them, as the business goes, so will the land, as far as I can see. And without it?
I mean, if the land remains tied to the corporations?
Yes, yes. Without that land, the peoples will simply cease to be as a people. They'll just jump into the big melting pot with everybody else, which kind of looks like to me was the intent from the start by those who offered the settlement, such as it was. It doesn't look very good to me. I don't know what it would take, particularly to change the picture, but it looks to me like the sovereignty issue is something that hasn't been addressed, at least favorably, as far as the Claims Act is concerned. I think that is something that's necessary for the survival of those corporations in any form, and the land that's tied to them, and the people that's tied to that land.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen.
I'm going to say something again. I was going to say just a little bit ago about the Land Claims Settlement Act. Another reason why I think it was set up to fail. You know, you give, you put some people that isn't used to big business into big business, and eventually they're, you know, they're going to be setting boundaries between each other's, and pretty soon you're going to have them fighting against each other's, and that's another point I think that this Land's Claim has, is you got the natives fighting against the natives now, and The only people, you know, I don't want to offend anybody, but I have to say what I have to say. The only people making money in this thing are lawyers, planners, and you know, consultants, and another thing they had put too in that in the Lance claim was that each corporation had to get an audit every year, you know, and for a small corporation that, you know, barely makes the money, you know, they have to spend $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 every year just for an audit. A good review would be plenty enough. And
how much do they spend for audits, did you say?
Well, I'd say at a probably a minimum of $1,500 to $3,500. Well, we've had it for 1500, so.
When you say we, you mean your corporation?
Yes, that's
which
correct.
Is
the Chinega Village Corporation.
Yeah.
And it's a small, it's probably one of the smaller corporations in the state of Alaska.
How many members in it?
69.
You have to have an audit every year.
That's correct.
What does your corporation do besides have an audit?
As far as making profit, nothing. So I don't see what we have to have an audit for.
Does it have any employees?
No, it doesn't.
So it exists.
It exists
on paper.
We pay our taxes. We pay our for our audits, and that's about it.
I interrupted you. Were you going on from there?
No, I wasn't. I was done.
Mr. Christensen, did you want it back for the microphone?
No.
Gilbert Olson with the registered to the EAC Corporation, Village Corporation, and the Chugach Regional Corporation. I feel pretty much the same way that everybody has already spoken about in the respect of it was a setup to deprive the native people of their lands and money. And as far as what Larry said, the lawyers and consultants and such, I agree with him also there. But there are several other things that I see definitely wrong with the land claims. As far as the younger people and the older people, I came right in the middle. I was involved in the land claims almost from the beginning. I was very active in the forerunner of the Chugach Region Corporation, which at the time was called the Chugach Native Association. And then I got involved in the EAC Corporation. But as far as the land claims for particularly the elder people, like I said, I came right in the middle. I figured at my age, I would be just about right to, by the time I kicked off, my kids would be well off enough that with the land claims to, so they wouldn't have to work. But to me, it does not look like it could any way be possible for some of the very same reasons some of these other people spoke about, is throwing what a lot of people call dumb natives into the business world. It was definitely a mistake. Not on the natives' part. They left them alone and not tied them down with rules and regulations as much as they did. I think they could have made it. The other thing is, as far as the land goes, they gave us a 20-year limit. The regional corporation spent 12 years trying to get their land, which only gives them only 8 more years to go. The village corporation was a little bit more fortunate. We did get, excuse me, we did get our land earlier, the village corporation, but by the same token, we lost many years of utilizing that land, plus the fact that the EAC Corporation was, I would be willing to bet, was the last village corporation to be certified. Because we had, the village of Eyak was lost to the infringement of the Copper River Highway right here in Cordova. The land was taken away from the village. Consequently, we have no land base because of it. But another issue is the sand and gravel issue. I do not believe that the regions should control the sand and gravel in any village lands. I think that was a very stupid mistake on the part of our so-called benefactors, I guess, that you had to go to somebody else for a natural resource that you could utilize yourself as a form of making yourself self-sufficient. It would have been one of our very best things to make ourselves self-sufficient here in Cordova and the Village Corporation. I imagine you haven't heard too much of this in a lot of the villages, but right here it's a very prime area. It's very good. The sand and gravel, I understand. I'm not sure, but I understand comes under the mining and mineral laws, and that's the reason it